Today in conversation with Boko Shiki, a filmmaker. We're here for another episode of We Are What We Speak, the podcast. I am Aaliyah Mitchell. I'm your host today, and I'm here with an awesome guest.
I'm Toko Shiki.
One of the main things I know about you is that you're a filmmaker, a storyteller, and so I'm excited to learn more about your language story. And to sort of start us off, who are you, and what's some of your background that could be cool for us to know?
So I'm a Japanese. I was born in Japan, and back in 2005, I moved to the United States, and then I came here for to go to a college, and I was a photography student, and I love photography, but after graduation, I became a photographer, but 2012, one girl who has mental illness shared her story with me, and then that was powerful. And I felt like her problem is like, have you ever heard of trichotillomania? People are kind of compulsively pulling hair from scalp. So she has a big bald spot. But such a beautiful girl, and then usually she's wearing hat, so never knew such a thing. And but then she told, she came to me, and then I'd love to talk to you. And I didn't talk to her so much. And then what do you want to share? And then she shared, I have a bald spot, and I was surprised. And then I learned about trichotillomania, and then that was like more 13 through. Even some people 30, like around that age group, mostly some people different, some exception, yeah. But having that issue. And she said, I don't want to hide anymore. And that story, I felt like would help someone who are dealing with exactly trichotillomania or not, because her story is like not just a struggle, but then she told me how to deal with difficulties and stuff like that. So we made a short film to share her, of course, her struggles, and also the way she deal with that difficulties. And then actually got a lot of feedback from somebody dealing with trichotillomania or other mental illness. Yeah. And I felt like, wow, story has the power to give awareness or share somebody's like different views, and also sometimes understand each other somehow in the society. So I felt like this is a really powerful thing. And then still doing the photography, but I kind of switched to making film after that.
Yeah, that's super cool to hear about the power of filmmaking, telling stories, right. and you know, transmitting them across different spaces for different people. That's actually one of the reasons why we're doing this project, is we are really interested in language and in linguistics. And we really want to tell like stories that center around language and communication. For a similar reason, we have our own stories. I have my own language background and language story. But we were interested in like really focusing on the stories of others. And I just like that it's the same sort of the same draw. There's a story that really compelled us to move forward with this.
Right.
And part of it is there's going to be someone who relates to what you have to say today. And so it's really exciting. So I want to take us backwards and sort of take a look at your childhood, your upbringing. How were you taught to think about language growing up? And it might have been like implicit too, right? So how were you socialized to use language and think about language growing up?
Right. I think I'd like to explain a little bit about Japanese.
Yes.
So, yeah. My background is, like I said, like I'm from Japan, and I use Japanese as my first language. And Japanese has a kind of a, like in big category, there are a lot of different kinds, but if I say boldly, like there is two different kind of ways to speak in Japanese. One is a very polite way,
Yep.
And then one is a casual way. And then when we are a child at the school or from parents, like parents are a little different story because when we are a child, like we start learning, like same as mama, dad, and stuff like that.
Yeah.
But then in school, or I mean school age, generally we learn polite way of speaking. And then that is usually we use that like in the polite way of language. There are many categories.
Yes. Yeah.
But then we are using polite way in general. First person to meet like an unknown person, stranger, or go to kind of like shops and stuff like restaurants and stuff like that. We use a polite way, but get to know a person more and then start using casual way and stuff like that. But because of that, first, like we learn as a polite way in the school. And then I think it's also we are kind of like, I think Japanese is kind of interesting culture because mm-hmm. it's in this culture also there are a lot of beliefs, right?
Yeah.
But Christian beliefs is a kind of big things, right?
Yes.
So Japan is not really practicing, but then Buddhist or Shinto idea behind us. So I think most important thing is respect others and then cooperate with other people and stuff like that, which means like more like to respect others using language as a really good tool to make it, kind of creating a good relationship. So I think that's naturally we learned use of language. So there's two different kinds of very more like casual or polite, using polite language first and then show that communication is like we are good to go.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, yes, that's the kind of general way. Of course, a lot of students start learning bad slangs and stuff like that. So I think everywhere. But I think Japan school is really kind of, in my time, very strict.
Mm.
Not really like, there is an exception, of course, but it's really, people are really learning that way. I think ending getting older,
mm-hmm.
I think using polite way of speaking as a sarcastic way sometimes. Like if you are already get to know and then really friend, but then using polite way as a like a circus, you know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
Or like using casual way to defend, like kind of like if somebody did something rude to you, using that as a like strong statement.
Oh,
or,
okay,
right. Yeah. So it's like we're, of course, in English, too, there are a lot of different kind of way of speaking, but Japanese had, like I said, big two things, and then there are so many different kinds, also slangs and stuff like that.
Yeah. And I think in terms, we might understand it as like formal, informal, mm-hmm. and the way language informs culture, and the way you can, like you said, demonstrate respect through language. That's one of the sort of elements of your story that's really interesting because, like you said, you're sort of developing this sense or, I guess, style that informs what you say, but also how you behave.
I think a sense is actually a really good translation. Actually, kind of sense, we got kind of know when we are using that we say keigo. Keigo is polite way.
Yeah.
Saying like a little bit more sophisticated and also respect and then kind of like educated person.
Yeah.
Kind of, yeah. And then casual is, it's not bad, but more friend, like more open and kind of like, or sometimes using, like I said, a strong way to pushing out.
Right. So what might you say to someone who's a friend as a hello? And I'm guessing that people are going to know what it is you say.
Oh, yeah. For a friend?
Mm-hmm, for a friend.
Hello. You know, usually, like, hello is like a, is.
No. And then someone you don't know. I'm leading a little bit there. I'm like, I think they're gonna know at least that one.
Right.
So that's
very different.
Yeah, very different. But that's a really good example, I think, and a simple one. How has your sense of the way you were brought up to think about it evolved, maybe since coming to the United States? I'm thinking, do you use language in the same way, even if you're speaking English?
Wow, that's it. Probably I say because of my lack of vocabulary, I don't have the tool to express that. Mm. Kind of like I do in Japanese. If I use Japanese, I have a lot of it. Like if I'm painting, a lot of colors I have, and then I can choose which color I'm going to use to paint my thoughts or my expression. So I could, there are many choices, but then in English, I don't have that much choices. So I kind of more become blunt or direct sometimes. And then I wish I could do a little bit more like I do in Japanese, but I kind of become more direct person I think in Japanese. So it's not really I'm hoping, but kind of become like that.
Mm. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I have the same experience. I mean, English is the language I'm most proficient in. And so no matter what I'm speaking, I'm still adding more to my vocabulary to widen the color gamut, essentially.
Right.
So that I can express with more nuance.
Yeah.
Right? And that's sort of,
I know.
Same thing. Do you feel like you have a goal with English? So I know for me, studying another language isn't about becoming super native level. I'm interested in studying a language enough to express nuance.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like that's my goal. Do you have a goal like that personally? Or is it just go with the flow?
Yeah, I think it's an interesting question. I actually, my job is, I'm a filmmaker.
Yes.
Of course, filmmaking part is, language is important because I have to communicate with other people. But at the same time, I feel like I can use visual as my powerful tool to communicate with other people. And I'm very much visual person, even if in Japanese culture. So I feel like it sounds like an excuse, but because of the lack of vocabulary, I could think how I can deliver this, my thoughts to client or actors or actresses or something like that. So to think about I'm better of drawing a storyboard or showing the example and stuff like that. Goal is, of course, without having the difficulty or pause, I could communicate with people, something like that. But at the same time, weirdly helping me to use visual as a tool to communicate with other people because I'm doing this as a job. So it's a... I'm not sure about goal. But of course, I want to share my deep thoughts by using language. But if I had that, I could make something with my visual or something.
Exactly.
Right.
Yeah, so you can accomplish your quote-unquote goal through visuals, right? I mean, this does bring me to sort of another element of that. I feel like Japanese is, languages that have characters like Japanese, like kanji, there's an inherent sort of art somehow in that. I remember taking this calligraphy class. I was very bad at it. I was in a class with 8-year-olds and I was getting this appreciation for the style. It felt like art, but it was writing. Do you feel that you're more artistic because perhaps you had more exposure to calligraphy as an example? Or is it I mean, is it just writing and therefore
you know, more or less? Interestingly, I think Japanese teacher really care about how to write. Yeah. I mean, even like some quote, like your writing is represent your heart or something like that, you know? So like that kind of like huge, right? Like if my writing is nasty and people think it's like I'm like that kind of careless person.
Yeah.
So nice writing, like kanji or whatever, hiragana and stuff like that. Nice writing is representing myself. In that case, like I want to be nicer, nice writing. Yeah. Or like I'm like there are a lot of nice English speaker with great writing, but at the same time, I sometimes see like people write really, really fast, and then, no.
I'm covering my notes.
No. But you know what I mean. Like that's like when I was a child, like writing is really like important. That's why calligraphy also like it's like one of the things that we have to concentrate and kind of like a zen moment and then doing a commit to write. I didn't think it's at home. That's interestingly weird. That's like a normal thing. It's already there. But think as this is representing myself, which means I want to be a nice as much as possible. Of course, that's kind of like ideal. Of course, a lot of people changing and they really getting bad or something. But yeah, I think like that's kind of a learning that way. Writing is important to represent yourself or something.
I don't want to ask your age, but I have a friend who was taught, there was like a handwriting class, I guess, but I never had that in school, and it could just be the school that I was at. Do you feel like treating writing as a form of self-representation, is that an older idea, or is that something they're still teaching in school today? I don't know.
I mean, not everybody says something like that, but then think there are those kind of idea, like writing is showing that person.
Mm-hmm.
I kind of makes sense if a really careful person really carefully write and really kind of like careless person making, I mean, kind of like makes sense things, but then I think quite a lot of times people are saying something like that. Not really school has to teach that way like that, but yeah.
I don't know. There's been conversations about how we're not teaching that anymore, mm-hmm. and it says something about our society, about our values. So that's what sort of made me think about this question. Uh-huh. Like, was it old? Was it ever, I don't know.
But then, you know, recent, for example, like people doing the like wrong things or something and then on the online. So like famous people did something wrong and then try to apologize to the public. They usually write in hand and then post that photo of the handwriting. And then that handwriting is not really good. People criticize about it. This person did this bad, and then this letter's handwriting is so bad. He not really care about this or something like that. So handwriting is actually like people see as like as a part of him or part of her.
Yeah.
You know what I'm trying to say? So it's more than just writing, I think.
Yeah.
Still now.
You know what? That makes total sense. And it makes a lot of sense because it's an extension of who we are.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there's all kinds of like quizzes that said, you know, what does your handwriting say about you? So some of those things, I feel like sometimes I don't give weight to them, but I mean, it is a form, like I think graphology, like the study of handwriting. Mm. I mean, it's a field for a reason, right? Because there's like a basis for understanding things about a person, about their mentality, their physical condition, all kinds of things. So, yeah, I think you're right. That was a good example.
Posting handwriting for apology.
Yeah, that's funny. What if you get someone with better handwriting?
Yeah,
to write
I think
it?
So. It's actually people are a little bit more. Oh, this person is sophisticated, or this person mm-hmm. educated, or something like that. Probably a little bit see a different, like in better way.
Oh,
yeah,
interesting.
I know.
So. I also want to know more about some of your language experiences, right? Thinking back to the purpose of this show, one of our like main goals to highlight different stories, this is an opportunity for people out there to connect with folks that maybe they don't realize they have something in common with. Mm. But also it gives us a chance to sort of think about how we navigate the world, how we exist in mm-hmm. the world. And so I'm interested in some of your language experiences here. One of the things you shared was how people seem to reach conclusions about your intellect based on the way you speak, even though we know there is no link between like the way a person speaks with their intelligence necessarily, right? So like speaking quote unquote properly doesn't mean you're a smarter person. And so that's one of the things you share. Can you talk a little bit more about some of your experiences here?
Right. That specific experience is nothing really. My friend never ever have intent to hurt me or anything like that. But then we went to Japan, all a group of people. And then I'm the only person can speak in Japanese. Mm. I could speak in Japanese during that trip. So I needed to deal with a lot of things. Oh. And then we were kind of like a working situation too. So I kind of have to talk, like not negotiate, but sometimes negotiate and something. Yeah. So a lot of things I needed to talk. So that one of my friends saw me and made a joke. Hey, Toko is not dumb. Like, mm-hmm. yeah, it's like a joke, you know?
Yeah.
Toko is not dumb. She can speak. And then I felt like I laugh because I knew he said just for a joke. He was saying like also like, look at us. We are just look like a dumb, could not speak anything, you know? But then that's kind of like, I am in United States. That's kind of, you know what I'm saying? Like,
yeah.
So which means you are thinking I'm dumb in the United States. But I kind of laugh about it. But at the same time, I still remember about that moment, which means a little bit kind of bothering me. But at the same time, I don't have some certain, like you said, it's difficult to share thoughts with nuance and stuff like that. Or like some of my friends are really good at using like a choice of words or expression phrases and stuff like that. I don't have that. So I kind of understand. But I was hoping people not to judge me because of that only see I like use my choices of word. And another thing was like, that was kind of like half joke kind of experience. But then this one, I'm not going to go to the deep part, but then so. My intention was totally different place, but I tried to explain something important to someone, and then that person really felt totally wrong way, and then the person was judged me as a terrible person, and then I was so shocked. Because my intention is totally here. That's the reason why I'm explaining about this, but took that only, wow, this person is so terrible, and also like spreading that to other people or something like that. It was so painful and so sad. But at the same time, I felt like, okay, think about my lack of vocabulary and then my expression also very kind of clumsy. And then also, as a person listening, the listener have their own projection. Mm-hmm. So I can't control that.
Yep.
So I was like kind of like analyzing why that happened. So I felt like, okay, I must care about what I'm talking and what I'm choosing the words. And also, I definitely have to clear my intention. I'm not trying to hurt someone or anything like my intention's here. That's why I'm talking this or something. Mm-hmm. That's really important information to share. Yeah. But sometimes it's like, not this part, that intention part is like totally gone. And then just only remember about what I said. And then like, so that was like, still I'm sometimes I'm a little bit afraid to speak something because if somebody judge me by that, my intentions are totally not that. But like that was still helpful. It's not easy to overcome. Yeah,
I think this is a really great opportunity to talk about how communication is it requires more than one person often. I have a friend who likes to say it doesn't take more than one person to have a problem, but it takes more than one person to fix the problem. And just hearing that you were misunderstood, I mean, it's a bummer because one thing we can do is pause and seek to clarify, you know?
Exactly. Yeah. If something decide, oh, she is a bad person, before deciding that, if we're having the clarification, like if I'm giving the chance to express my intention a little bit better way, probably didn't need to go that way. But at the same time, people need to choose by themselves. So that time, probably that person thought, oh, no more. You know, it's so unfortunate. But then I felt like, okay, I have to be careful how to express, and also should make clear my intentions, the reason why I'm saying this or something like that. But I think probably it's like I have a less tool to express my thoughts in this country. But then I think even if I speak in Japanese, like my own country, still this is a problem, I think. Mm-hmm. You know, even native like speaker themselves, I thought they totally understood what I'm saying, but then totally twisted the way to understand what I said or something. That kind of things happen. So it's more so here. But I think a kind of universal problem.
Yeah, that's actually one of the things I wanted to talk with you about. But maybe we'll get there. So I also think this is a good chance to pause and encourage people to listen responsibly. That's actually one of our taglines, our hashtags is speak responsibly, listen responsibly. Maybe on one hand you think, oh, it's my responsibility to speak clearly, but as another person in the conversation, I have a responsibility to investigate and listen more responsibly. I don't know that you meant to say that thing and hurt, you know, say it in a hurtful way. So maybe I should ask to clarify, is this what you meant to say? Mm-hmm. So this isn't like me saying this is how people should function. This is how people should communicate. I'm wanting to encourage people to think more critically when they're in these kinds of conversations, whether it's a conflict or not, right? Whether it's a regular, everyday situation or we're trying to reach an agreement, we're trying to negotiate, for example. So yeah, I think it's really cool for us to practice that, to practice and get better at listening.
Right. Listening is such a key of everything, I think. It's especially nowadays, people are communicating online.
Yes.
So it's really kind of like through at nasty word each other, like judging immediately, which has been happening in my own language too. Mm. Some people are like, even so, we are using same language. That's the reason why, like, deciding, oh, what you said, this means you are like, I'm not saying bad word, but you are better.
Yeah.
Sometimes it's really short temper and they're not even listening. I think they decided not to listen. That's the reason why creating the problem, huge problem.
Oh my gosh. This is, this reminds me of I don't really know how to describe this, but sometimes when I'm browsing the internet, there's these posts and someone's like, people go, forgive me, English isn't my first language. And then they explain the thing. And so there's so many of the folks like preferencing because of the connection across the world. There's more and more people interacting who have like different languages that they speak in. And so I often see people saying, okay, before I talk, forgive me, French is my first language, or forgive me, right? And so they're preferencing because they anticipate making mistakes.
Right.
And sometimes it's funny because then they go on to say something like beautiful and deep and they didn't need to apologize. But other times it allows for people to like acknowledge that maybe they have a limited vocabulary or something like that. And so it's kind of cool to see internet strangers sort of cooperating.
Yeah.
It's kind of random. But it's kind of cool when people go, okay, wait, I'm going to make a mistake. And then they are like flawless or something.
Right.
But yeah, it's just when you were saying, talking about people arguing, I was thinking about, so it just brought me to some stories that I've come across. Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's really interesting.
Right. I think, some people are really like ready to listen to other people, but then some people are really not to listen to, and then more thinking about what I should them down or something.
Yeah.
So it's like immediately I can feel that kind of like a, how can I say that it, communication, this communication go well, or oh, this is going to be a battle or something.
Yeah, right. Exactly. Yeah, yeah.
More with Toko in part 2.